Let's go ahead and get started on another week of our verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired Word. We are currently looking at the transition time between the Old and the New Testaments, and we've actually arrived in that immediate background period before the Gospels. In fact, when we take up the story today where we left off last session, it's 20 BC, and there's zero doubt that Mary and Joseph are alive. They're still young children, but they could easily have been eyewitnesses of some of the things that we'll be talking about over the next day. And so let's go ahead and return our attention back to the Antiquities of the Jews, book 15, and I'm going to start in chapter number 11. This is the speech given by Herod the Great to the Jewish people assembled at the temple complex in Jerusalem, when he wanted to convince them to let him renovate the temple complex. Now keep in mind, the building that's up on the Temple Mount right now was built by Zerubbabel and Joshua almost 500 years ago. It's only lacking a couple of years of being the 500th anniversary of Zerubbabel's temple. And Herod has been bringing everything else up in his kingdom to a high standard, modernizing everything. He's building roads and aqueducts, sewer systems, paving all of the city streets in brand new cities and some renovated cities. Remember that he's already held the Augustus Games at Jerusalem, which became the go-to event for people all over the Roman Empire, where he had contests of athletics and sporting events and poetry readings and drama. All of that happened at Jerusalem in honor of Augustus Caesar. And Herod rebuilt, actually built brand new venues for many of those things and rebuilt a lot of the other places around Jerusalem. So he is bringing his Jewish kingdom up to the level of the best place to live in the entirety of the empire. Now, I know for some of you that's coming as a bit of a surprise because you've seen presentations through movies and television shows and books, novels, and preaching even, that actually in those presentations, the Jewish place was kind of the back side of the Roman Empire, that it was the backwater, and that everybody was dirty and everything was filthy, and it was just not a good place to live. That is horribly inaccurate. As we're about to read, Herod makes a big deal out of the fact that he's made the Jewish homelands a marvelous place to live. So let's go ahead and quote from Josephus, and he is quoting of Herod the Great's speech in 20 BC at the temple complex. And one last thing. Herod's about 53 whenever he gives this speech. He's been the king of the Jews for about 18 years now. Quote, "I think I need not speak to you, my countrymen, about such other works as I have done since I came to the kingdom, although I may say that you have been performed, they have been performed in such a manner as to bring more security to you than glory to myself. For I have neither been negligent in the most difficult times about what tended to ease your necessities, nor have the buildings I have made been so proper to preserve me as yourselves from injuries. And I imagine that with God's assistance, I have advanced the nation of the Jews to a degree of happiness which they never had before. And for the particular edifices belonging to your own country and to your own cities, as also to those cities that we have lately acquired, which we've erected and greatly adorned and therefore augmented the dignity of your nation, It seems to me a needless task to enumerate them to you, since you know full well them yourselves. But as to that undertaking which I have in mind to set about at present, and which will be a work of the greatest piety and excellence that can possibly be undertaken by us, I will now declare it to you. So there it is. He lays out in front of him, says, I don't really need to tell you how grand it is to live amongst the Jewish people, because you've experienced it. You've watched it happen. You know that this is the best place on earth to live. But I now want to do an even greater project. And so then he talks to them about it. Quote, our fathers indeed, when they returned from Babylon, and that'd be almost 500 years ago, built this temple to God Almighty, yet does it want or lack 60 cubits of its largeness in altitude. Now, I'm going to break in. What he means by that is that it is less than 90 feet shorter. It's 90 feet shorter than the tallest part of Solomon's temple. And here's his explanation as to how that happened. For so much did that first temple which Solomon built exceed this temple. Nor let anyone condemn our fathers for their negligence or want of piety herein, for it was not their fault that the temple was no higher. For they were Cyrus and Darius, the son of Hystaspes, who determined the measure for its rebuilding. And it hath been by reason of the subjection of those fathers of ours to them and to their posterity, and then after them to the Macedonians, that they had not the opportunity to follow the original model of this pious edifice, nor could raise it to its ancient altitude. So his comment is, look, the reason it's only half as tall in the front as Solomon's temple is because the Persians, when they gave permission to rebuild the building, only allowed our ancestors to rebuild the basic structure of the building. That is, the shrine building made up of the Holy of Holies and the holy place in front of it. They didn't allow them to build this massive tower on the front of it that was part of the Solomonic Temple. And then when the Greeks came along, they had their own issues where they could not get this temple tower built. And he's going to be focusing an awful lot on that temple tower. And then he says, but since I am now, by God's will, your governor, and have had peace a long time, and have gained great riches and large revenues, and by the way, he's not exaggerating about that. Remember, he is tax immune ever since he gained his Roman citizenship back when he was about in his early 20s. So he's had 20 plus years of never paying any taxes. He's invested heavily in things all over the Roman world, and he has gained trillions of dollars of wealth. That is the best way to describe it. He is unbelievably wealthy. And so now he goes on with that. And what is the principal thing of all? I am at amity with and well regarded by the Romans, who, if I may say so, are the rulers of the whole world. So that's another thing he points out. He is best friends with the two leaders of the Roman Empire, Augustus Caesar, who is the emperor, and his right-hand man, Agrippa. And Herod is the number three most powerful person in the Roman Empire because he's personal friends with both of those guys. And so that's another one of his points is, not only am I immensely wealthy and have brought peace and prosperity and advance to the Jewish homelands, but I'm also best friends with the emperor and the emperor's best friend. Continuing. And I will do my endeavor to correct that imperfection, that is, the lack of the tower in particular, which has arisen from the necessity of our affairs and the slavery we've been under formerly, and to make a thankful return after the most pious manner to God for what blessings I have received from him by giving me this kingdom, and that by rendering this temple of his as complete as I am able." Now, if that surprises you to hear all of that out of the mouth of Herod the Great, it's because you're used to seeing him in the latter stage of his life when he's a crazy person and completely insane about protecting his throne from those that want to take it from him. We will see that character of Herod develop, but it's not here yet. At this time, this guy is trying his best to make the Jewish people and the Jewish homelands the best place in the world. And he also wants to express thankfulness to God for being with him in the midst of all of this rise to power by renovating the temple and trying to bring it up to the standard that existed in the Solomonic temple. And we are positive that the Solomonic temple was the most expensive building ever built per square foot or cubic foot on the entire planet. We know that David pumped in several trillions of dollars of building material into the building project of Solomon's temple. That doesn't even take in consideration all of the technical expertise of those that were involved in the building of it. So Herod believes that he can come close to bringing the Solomonic temple back. And when we see his projects end, it comes pretty close. Now, Josephus says in his story that the people were skeptical as to whether or not Herod could pull this thing off. And so he, that is Herod, lets them know he will take precautions. And here's more of the quote from Antiquities, book 15, chapter 11. Quote, "This was the speech which Herod made to them, but still this speech affrighted many of the people as being unexpected by them." See, they weren't expecting to be told by Herod, "I want to massively improve the temple complex." Back to the text. "And because it seemed incredible, it did not encourage them, but put a damp upon them. For they were afraid that he would pull down the whole edifice and not be able to bring his intentions to perfection for its rebuilding." So they're worried that he's all talk and won't be able to follow through with it. And if they let him go, he'll pull down or deconstruct portions of the temple shrine building and then not be able to build it back up again. And so they're hesitant. And so this danger appeared to them to be very great, and the vastness of the undertaking to be such as could hardly be accomplished. But while they were in this disposition, the king encouraged them and told them he would not pull down their temple till all things were gotten ready for building it up entirely again. So he tries to convince them, "Look, I promise you, I will have everything on hand, all the materials ready to go before I ever dismantle anything on the Temple Mount." Now that kind of goes along with the building of the temple in the past. We know that Solomon's temple, all of the material was already checked that it would fit together perfectly before it was ever brought to the Temple Mount. It was almost as if the temple was kind of snapped together or just kind of put together at the last minute up on the Temple Mount. There were no hammers or stones, hammering of stones or sawing of lumber or anything like that during the building of the Solomonic Temple. It was modular, if you will. So Herod is basically saying, "I'll do that same approach. Everything will be ready to go before I ever take anything down." And so again, as he promised them beforehand, so he did not break his word with them, but got ready 1,000 wagons and that were to bring the stones for the building. And he chose out 10,000 of the most skilled workmen and brought 1,000 sacerdotal garments for as many of the priests, and had some of them taught the arts of stone cuttings and others of carpentry, and then began to build. But this not till everything was well prepared for the work. So he's got some other things that he has to contend with. And that is, he needs transportation. He needs to bring all of the materials there. So he's got 1,000 wagons ready to go. Some of these wagons must have been really specialized, because we're talking about moving some massive stones. Stones heavier than the stones that were in the Great Pyramid at Giza. And so these massive wagons must have had these huge load-bearing wheels, probably many, many, many wheels on a single wagon. Just think about all the dynamics in trying to spread that weight around on the carting. And so he's got all of those ready to go, but he's also got these professionals that know how to put things together, to work with stones and carpentry. However, parts of the building cannot be touched except by priests. So he has to have a crash course in construction, masonry, and carpentry from these specialized workers to priests in order for them to do that work on the shrine building itself, the Holy of Holies and the holy place. So we've got all of this training that's going on for several months. He makes sure that they've got special clothing, special uniforms to wear when they're doing the building. So all of that started, that speech was given at a point in 20 BC. And so over the next several months, until they finally get into 19 BC, all the preparation work is done. All the material is there. And the priest construction workers have been trained. And then they get busy on the building project in the beginning of 19 BC. Now, Josephus goes into detail about the size of some of these stones. He said some of them were measured 25 cubits. Remember, a cubit is 18 inches at this time. 25 cubits by 8 cubits by 12 cubits. Let's put that in English feet. 37.5 feet by 12 feet by 18 feet. That is massive. And it helps you appreciate the things in Matthew 24 later when the apostles are telling Jesus, look at all these massive stones. Look at these amazing stones. Because they were amazing. Now, I have been to Jerusalem, to the Temple Mount, 3 times now. Plan on going again in October of 2023. Hopefully some of you can come with us. And there are none of the stones of the temple buildings themselves left. As Jesus predicted, it happened. Not one stone was left upon another. All of them were taken down. However, the retaining walls that Herod put up in order to expand the worship plateau of the Temple Mount, they're still in place. And those stones, some of them come very close to these dimensions. I've stood next to them, touched them, measured them, have pictures of them. I love looking at them. And then we know where the largest stone so far to be found in the Temple Mount retaining wall area is. And I've seen that 3 times now and hope to see it a 4th time in about a year. And so that large stone is about 42 feet long. It's 11 feet tall. And then we're thinking it's about 8 feet deep into the wall. They're not sure because they don't have the ability to measure it all the way in there. Now, that's very close to the dimensions given by Josephus. This is called, if you want to look it up, this is called the Western Stone. It's down below the Western Wall where you see the prayers going on. The stone is this stone is estimated to weigh over 300 tons. And again, the largest stones in the Great Pyramid are 80 tons. So we're talking about 4 times greater than that, at least. So these stones are spectacular. And Josephus says that Herod was doing this to bring great glory to the building of this temple. Now, if the retaining wall stones looked like that and were that size, imagine what the great big stones in the temple building itself must have been like. Now, Josephus then goes on and describes some of the most impressive parts of the temple that was being built, particularly focusing on this 180-foot tower that would be on the front. So, quote, "The temple had doors also at the entrance and lintels over them of the same height with the temple itself." Now, when he says the temple itself, he's talking about the shrine building, the Holy of Holies and the holy place in front of it together. And we know that that was 80 feet tall. So there's a great big door on the front of that shrine building, underneath the tower, that is an amazing door. And then continuing the quote, "They were adorned with embroidered veils with their flowers of purple and pillars interwoven. And over these, but under the crown work, was spread out a golden vine with its branches hanging down from a great height." This is a representation of a grapevine going all over the top and down the sides of this door that goes into the temple building itself. These vines represent Israel, and they're kind of a portrayal in gold of the story that when Israel came into the land, the spies brought back these grape clusters that were as tall, almost as tall as a man. And so now we've got a grapevine in gold that has grape clusters as tall as a man hanging on the top and sides of this door that goes into the temple building. With its branches hanging down from a great height, the largeness and fine workmanship of which was a surprising sight to the spectators to see what vast materials there were and with what great skill the workmanship was done. So that's amazing. Its height, now we're talking about the building itself, just the shrine building. Its height extended all along to 90 cubits, so that's 135 feet. And its height, its length was 50 cubits, that's 75 feet. Its breadth was 30 cubits, or 20 cubits, which is 30 feet. But that gate, which was at this end of the first part of the house, was, as we've already observed, all over covered with gold, as was its whole wall about it. It also had golden vines above it, from which clusters of grapes hung as tall as a man's height. And so that comes from the book of the Jewish Wars, book number five, chapter number five, because Josephus talks in both places, Antiquities and Wars, about the building of this building. So that is the construction project of the shrine building itself. And it was finished in a year and a half. So that means we're now going to move to 18 BC. And here's the quote from Antiquities 15, chapter 11. "But the temple itself was built by the priests in a year and 6 months, upon which all the people were full of joy. And presently they returned thanks, in the first place to God, and in the next place for the alacrity of the king. And they feasted and celebrated this rebuilding of the temple for the king. He sacrificed 300 oxen to God, as did the rest, everyone according to his ability, the number of which sacrifices is not possible to set down, for it cannot be that we should truly relate it. For at the same time with this celebration for the work about the temple fell also the day of the king's inauguration, which he kept of an old custom as a festival. And it now coincided with the other, which coincidence of them both made the festival more illustrious. Now, we're guessing that this is the anniversary of him becoming king at Jerusalem, which happened in the summer of 37. And so we know then that the temple must have been finished by the summer of 18, in a year and 6 months. And this completion date is actually tied into the chronology of Jesus' ministry, because it's mentioned, the completion date is mentioned in John chapter 2, verse 20, which took place at Passover in AD 30, when the Jewish authorities, in responding to Jesus saying, "Destroy this temple and in 3 days I'll build it back up again," which he was talking about the temple of his body, their response back was, "This temple has been completed for 46 years and you're going to tear it down and rebuild it in 3 days?" And so that anchors those comments by Jesus in John chapter 2 to Passover of AD 30. All right, so that kind of helps with that. Now, he's not done with his building of the temple complex because there's another building associated with the temple, which is the tower that had been built by the Hasmonean kings to protect the Temple Mount. Because remember, they rebuilt or rededicated the temple, and so they wanted a security fort just off to the north to protect the Temple Mount from ever coming under Gentile control again. And so that's called the Tower by the Hasmoneans. But when we come back tomorrow, we're going to find out that Herod renovates it as well and gives it a brand new name. He calls it after his friend Mark Anthony, and this becomes the Tower of Antonia.